This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Alyssa Explains It All. Today, we have a really great guest on, as usual. All of our guests are great, but today we actually have someone on who is an internet friend of mine. And I love making internet friends because it's like meeting friends through like a club. Like, I feel like I've just like started a club of the people that I just love so much that are in like the sex education space or sex positivity space and body positivity and all of that. Kind of space. We have Gordon on today, and he has a Instagram account, and it's called Fuck Yep Sex Positive. And I can't remember how we initially started to like become friendly. I think he just followed me on Instagram, and then I saw his page, and I was like, oh my god, this is great. Followed him back, and now we've become, you know, friends. And he's super interesting. He has a really interesting sort of character arc into what his life is now. He's also like such a soft-spoken guy. He's so sweet. He was so nervous to do this podcast, and he did such a great job, and I'm so happy that he came on. We talked a lot about like his journey from being in a really conservative household and to now having a lot more of like an open lifestyle with his sexuality and with his marriage and all of that great stuff. So I was so happy that he came on. He did such an amazing job, and you guys are gonna love him. Well, Gordon, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. We've been working on this for so long. I'm excited to actually like have the chat.
Yeah. Lots to cover.
So we met each other through Instagram.
Yes.
You have an account, Fuck Yeah Sex Positive. No. And you post obviously really sex positive things. And also I appreciate that a lot of your stories are just like about being neurodivergent and some like just mental health stuff, but kind of in like a lighter, funny way. And so it kind of balances out, you know, actually like dealing with those things. But it's actually like a pretty... You go back and forth between, I guess, being personal in terms of what you're sharing and just being like overall like sex positive. What encouraged you to create the account?
To go back a little bit, the humor and the mental health part of it, I think just from my own like life experience, that's how I handle the things that we can't control, right? Like humor is the best way to like diffuse sort of that like just inherent tension when it comes to mental illness, and especially like with other people, like getting people comfortable to talk about mental illness can be really challenging. And a lot of times you can use humor to sort of like just like sneak your way in there and be like, hey, this is actually cool to talk about. It's fine. But yeah, I think the whole like genesis for the account sort of came from being a part of the LDS religion. They don't like to be called Mormon anymore, despite spending like $1 billion on an Advent campaign talking about like, I'm a Mormon. And now they're like, that's actually a bad word. And it's like, is it?
God.
No, it's not.
That's so interesting. Why do you think they did that? Like, why do they feel like Mormon is a bad word, but LDS is fine? Because LDS to me just like is so close to the FLDS. And Mormon, I feel like I've know Mormon people who are not fundamentalists. So why? No. I don't understand that.
Yeah. I mean, because the full name of the church is ridiculous in itself, but it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which I like my brain still doesn't understand that sentence structure, but it's whatever.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it probably came from like negative connotations around like Mormons, and they're like, what if we just rebranded? Unfortunately, there's a whole ass history that exists in the world of people that know and have been through it. I don't pretend to know the ways that the church makes their decisions.
Yeah, that's fair. So, sorry, we were talking about when you created the account and like what made you want to start it. So you were saying growing up in that environment.
Yeah, and the environment was, I mean, purity culture like exists in, I would say, probably a large majority of religions in one form of another. And so like within the LDS church, it's, you know, very much like you don't date until you're 16. You have all these other rules about like, oh, you shouldn't be alone with a person of the opposite sex. I don't want to say repressive like ideology, but like kind of is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, with all of that, and then having my own journey once I left the church and being like, oh, actually, like, all of these things are not, like, inherently terrible. Like, that was just, like, a big moment for me. But it was more of, like, me wanting to create something at the very beginning just for me. Just, like, as an experiment, as a, like, oh, I want to, like, do this thing that combines some of my skills together and also provides like a space where people can, you know, feel comfortable either like asking questions or coming to learn information. And just kind of like, it kind of grew from there with like, oh, like I also want to do like mental health. I also want to do like body image. Like, like these things are things that like, I don't know, they affect, I think, more people then probably they realize affects them, you know, because a lot of it is just like societal or environmental. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this for like a few months. And like, it'll be a way for me to like do some design work, which I like to do like personally. I would never do it professionally because that's a lot of criticism. but it was kind of something that like got positive feedback in a way that I wasn't necessarily like expecting, you know, that's a form of encouragement. And you're like, oh, maybe I'll just keep doing this. Yeah.
Kind of, it sounds like it was like sort of an outlet for you and like a space for you to explore. And it ended up building a little community, which is really cool. Like that's kind of like, I feel like that's what social media was supposed to be and is now spun out into something else. But that was like the good natured intention of social media was that community building.
Yes. And also like at the same time, it's also been like just because I like personally, I just love like learning and having new experiences and like any reason that I can be like, oh, I should look into this or I should look into that, you know, like whatever. It was a good like built in sort of excuse to look into things that either I was curious about or I had friends that had questions about and just kind of like for my own knowledge that I could then like, you know, be like, well, if this person's asking it, probably more than one person wants to know this information in the world, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been interesting so far.
Yeah. So you were talking a little bit about growing up in the Mormon community and how conservative that is. And one of the things that you kind of touched on was how there's a lot of like morality that is unnecessarily tied to the way that people explore their sexuality when in reality, there's no like inherent good or bad with sexuality as long as everything's like consensual and safe.
Yep.
What was the like process for you wanting to like let go of that like weird morality and actually explore what you want to explore. I feel like therapy.
Yeah. No, I mean, so like when I was in college, like I had been like fairly, I mean, this isn't like unique to me, but I was fairly like depressed in high school, to the point of like being suicidal. So my high school experience wasn't great. And I think, you know, from that, I was like, oh, I, you know, am just like frustrated with things, or I'm like sad about something or whatever. And then like, as I kept getting older and I like went to college, and then like in college, I was, you know, diagnosed with bipolar type 2. And then like things started clicking into place. And I think that was kind of like me being like, oh, there's actually reasons for why I'm like this. And so like, in regards of like the morality part of the church, it kind of tied into that, because there was so much within the church that like, it's the saying of like, you don't know what you don't know, right? So much of this world existed, and I was just like in this little tiny box, you know, in this little bubble being protected. I'm like, I'm safe. it kind of like that, learning that about myself kind of was the spark of like, I want to know what else there is that like I necessarily didn't know existed, just because of the way that I grew up and the people that I grew up around and like what that environment was. Mm-hmm. And so once you're out of the church, for some people it's like, you know, well before they leave. I think for me it was probably a little bit before I left, but I think there's usually a little bit of like time after you leave the church where the world starts like coming more into focus and out of the like, I guess, veil that was, you know, existing between you. And so I think a lot of the sort of journey that I set myself on was, I'm going to treat everything as if it's just neutral. Like, and when I say everything, I mean like everything that the church taught me. I'm going to treat it all like it's neutral, and kind of just see where that takes me. And a lot of that took me to bad decisions. So, yeah. You know, yay for learning.
Well, you know, you started at a neutral place and then you were able to determine which side of the fence those activities were, and that's okay. Yeah. It's also interesting that like being diagnosed with bipolar 2, that was like a big catalyst for you wanting to be able to explore other things. Because I feel like that's one of the reasons why like getting a diagnosis in general is so important, because even if like I think you actually posted about this recently, and this was like it was actually like such a heartbreaking way to put it, but it's true that when you get diagnosed with something like that, like it's a life sentence, you deal with that in one way or another forever. But yeah. At the same time, it allows you to like give yourself permission to accept those things and then like make room to explore all of these other things.
Yep. And I think because a lot of it, like, and this is how it kind of tied into like the spark for morality from bipolar is that like, I don't think people realize like how much, when I say people, I mean people outside of the church, realize how much like self-worth is tied into like living by like the rules. Mm-hmm. And like if you break a rule, then you have to, you know, go to the bishop, which is like the local leader of the church in your area, and like tell your sins, and like be repentant, and, you know, go through this whole repentance process where you're not taking, you know, the bread and the water, because Mormons don't drink alcohol, so it was water. Yay, hydration.
One thing about those Mormons, they stay hydrated.
They are very hydrated. you start to realize that there are things about yourself that is just the way your brain is wired, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because I'd always be like, oh, I'm like spending a lot of money, I'm buying a coffee and then not even drinking it. Like, I am an idiot. What am I doing?
Right.
And then you're like, oh, that's actually a symptom of bipolar disorder, where you're spending lots of money making really bad choices. And you're like, oh, this this all like makes sense.
That's interesting.
Incredibly awkward.
That's interesting. Wait, so like one of the symptoms of well, and that's another thing too, I think, about when you actually are diagnosed for things, you dig into these like little symptoms. And that's why, like, you know, people like it's very easy to diagnose yourself through like a TikTok or whatever. But when you actually
get... Is it easy?
Oh my God. People love to diagnose themselves through a TikTok. But for the longest time, my For You page was trying to convince me that I was autistic, and like, maybe I am, but like, it was all of the videos I was getting were like small symptoms of how you might be autistic. I'm like, Jesus. Okay. I got it. But that's like the nice part about actually being officially diagnosed, because then you know all these like little small nuances of what actually plays into whatever the diagnosis is. So you're saying spending money, like frivolously, is part of the diagnosis?
I want to be clear that like it is, it affects everyone that has it differently. For me, that was one of the like, I guess, risk-taking behaviors was spending a lot of money when I didn't need to be doing that. But you're absolutely right. Like in that, when you have like a name to give it, you're then able to be like, oh, this is something that exists. This is something that I can look into. This is something that there's more information available in the world about. Mm-hmm. And then you basically gain like an entire like new set of tools that you are able to now go into the world and try to manage your symptoms, manage how it is, you know, when you're in an episode or whatever. And it just kind of spirals out from there, where you just start like, I think, questioning more of the things, where before you were probably just like, that's just how I am.
Right. Yeah. I think that's so important. So when did you decide that Mormonism wasn't for you anymore? Was this after high school?
Yeah. So in the church, men go on missions.
Yeah.
When they are 19. And so I was in the process of that, of leading up to going on a mission. And that's, I think, when I was really like, not even necessarily being like, oh, I'm going to leave the church. It was just like at that point, like questioning whether I was going to go on a mission. And really being like, do I believe this enough to be able to go out for 2 years and try to colonize, I mean, teach other people about, you know, this religion?
God. Right? Yeah.
So
the idea of even having missions be part of like the process, like all men just have to do them, is so psycho.
It's fine. Everything's fine. Nothing's burning.
Everything's fine. And 2 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, it is. And I think the further I got away from the church, and the more that like somehow, I don't know how, I've accumulated a lot of ex-Mormon people in my life, which is hilarious. We've all just like gravitated towards each other.
Yeah.
You start to realize, I think, that the missions are less about converting people and more about reinforcing the indoctrination of the church.
Yeah.
Because these kids are like getting a door slammed in their face every day, and it creates that isolation. Then they're like, it becomes like a very insular process for them, of like, where it's like, oh, nobody wants to hear this. This is the true church. Like, it just becomes like a circular logic situation. Yeah. If they convert people, that feels like a bonus, but I think it's more along the lines of like getting people really committed to the church. That's my opinion. It's probably true. Maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, that makes sense, because now you're forcing people to like really fight for this cause in the face of people constantly slamming a door, and that I'm sure makes people feel a lot more strongly about all of it. So you were like, now you were 19, you decided you weren't going to do the mission. Was your family upset or surprised?
I was a convert to the church, and my family was not members.
Oh,
so,
I didn't know that. That is so interesting. So were they relieved?
Hold on to that feeling you're feeling right now.
Okay.
I joined the church when I was 15. I had been going since I was like 11 because of my best friend. Because we moved up from California, and then we went from California, like Los Angeles area, to Spokane, Washington, which is polar opposites. You're going from a very diverse place to the most not diverse place. Mm-hmm. And so I had this friend that I had met that was close to where we lived. His family was all Mormon. He was the youngest of eight. Don't ask me why there's so many kids, but it was this thing where, like, the more I hung out, like, the more, like, I would just be around for church things happening, right? So I would go, his mom became, like, really good friends. Our families, like, were basically family to each other at that point. And then I converted when I was 15, 16. So at some point along the way, I was in the car with my mom driving to California to move my grandmother from Los Angeles to Spokane. And she decides that this is a really great time to be like, I didn't want to tell you before because I didn't want to influence your decision, but I used to be Mormon. And I was like,
no way.
What? At no point in my life was this ever a thing that was like, oh, she used to be this. Because, like, up until that point, we had been, like, the people that attend church for Christmas Eve for the songs. Yeah. And, like, I didn't really know what to do with that. I still don't know what to do with that. But I was just like, all right. And I kind of understand the logic of, like, her not wanting to affect my decision. But fast forward to after it had been a few years, then my mom rejoined and then my dad joined. So when I left the church, both my parents had become members.
Wow.
I wouldn't say they were mad because I think both of them understood. Mm-hmm. I don't really understand how my mom is a member of the church because she is incredibly liberal. And that does not go along with the church in a lot of ways.
Right.
She's like, women should have authority. And they're like, what are you talking about? And the whole thing. So they weren't like upset or anything. At least not outwardly to me, which I think was best case scenario, because, you know, that's how you can grow apart from family is when, you know, they don't necessarily agree with your choices.
Yeah.
Being a member when I was in my teens was a lot.
Yeah. So, like, during the most formative years. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. So then when did you start dating? Because I feel like people start like baby dating in middle school here and there, and they're like, yeah, we're dating
word.
And then God, you're right. No, I mean more like you say like, oh yeah, we're boyfriend girlfriend, and then you never hang out.
Yeah.
That in middle school, and then once you get to like high school, you can like actually go to like the movies or whatever.
Yeah.
But you weren't allowed to date till you were 16, which is high school.
Yeah.
But when did you start?
16, because Mormon, I think probably men and women, but especially Mormon boys, are incredibly horny people.
Yeah.
Because they've been repressed for most of their life.
Tell someone that they can't do something and they want to do it so badly.
Yeah. So 16 is when you're allowed to date. And at that point, it is only group dates that you're allowed to do. So I did a lot of group dates, a lot of bowling, a lot of dinner and a movie.
You know what? Actually, I don't disagree with group dates while people are young. I like the idea in general of like I wouldn't want my kid to like be alone maybe, but like, I like the idea of you guys are just going to go out as group. So I don't hate the group dates, but was your first experience in dating.
Yeah. And it was, I very much agree with like, Because doing a group date, it's like, oh, all the pressure is, you know, off like any one person, right? You have like the whole group dynamic. And then also people can try to keep each other from making dumb decisions.
Yeah.
So, that was my dating experience in Spokane. My best friend that was the one that had essentially converted me went to BYU in Idaho, which is its own whole set of...
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Wild.
But in Utah, things are not how they are in Spokane.
Yeah.
I went down to visit him once, and the group date idea was that we were going to go to a jewelry store and pick out engagement rings for our fake fiancés.
No, that was a group date?
I mean, group. It was me and him and then two women.
Oh my God.
But yeah. Like,
the women were there. So you were hypothetically picking out engagement rings for the women that you were, or girls that you were with.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes. And at the time, I was like, yeah, this is normal. This is fine. This doesn't, that's no so alarm bells are going off for me. But I mean, also, like, that's in line with the church because people marry super young.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Because, of course, because they haven't had sex their entire lives.
Right.
So like, I got to be able to be allowed to have sex.
Right. Oh, my God.
It was different because also at the same time, I don't know if this is like a Utah thing. Maybe you know the word NCMO. It's an acronym, NCMO. So it stands for non-committal makeout. And this was just a thing that existed on the campus.
That's so funny.
And that was, of course, before I even knew about the concepts of like soaking, which.
Right.
What?
The soaking is nuts. The soaking is nuts. I've heard that people will do the soaking and then like they'll have someone else shake a bed. That's wild.
I'm like, just do
just
it.
Just do it. Just do
what
it.
What are you doing?
What are we doing here? What are we doing? Oh my God. Wait, NCMO is so funny because I feel like giving it a name, it almost feels like they're trying to give give permission to like do that, when in reality that's just like making out with someone. Like, yeah. You know, any bars I've gone to and made out with a random person, never saw them again. I was NCMOing all over the place.
You were, without the confines of purity culture.
Well, I don't know about all that. Not the way that you were experiencing it, but
yeah. But so like, I went down to visit him. I was like 19 years old. Somehow got a random girl to be like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Which 19-year-old me was not super confident. I'm still not confident, but I was very much not confident then. And so that was like my first kiss at 19 in the middle of a field in the freezing cold weather, just casually making out.
Aw, that's sweet. I feel like that's probably a nicer first kiss story than many people have.
I mean, I don't know that I've heard a lot of first kiss stories just because I feel like it's so like in regular culture, it's just like something that happens at like an earlier age or, you know, it's just like a non-event that happens at past a certain age. Right. So you're like, oh, sure.
Yeah. I would have to really think about who my first like real kiss was.
Yeah. You got to go through the archive on that.
Yeah. I need to open my Rolodex and figure it out.
Yeah.
So, okay. So that was like first kiss, group dates. When did you start like regular dating?
Probably shortly after that. Mm-hmm. But so that like was still 19. Like, yeah, it was like 19, 20-ish. And that was interesting in its own way because like in the church, once you graduate high school, instead of being in the family church, you're in a singles church where it's all just single people up to like 32, and then you get kicked back to the family church, which feels like really cruel, but
I've never heard of that before. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
They literally are like, every time you go to church, it's a mixer. They're trying to set you up with somebody. Yep. And then once you're 32, you've expired and you got to go back to family church.
I could be making that number up. It was like 30s ish, I think. So like you're around all these people and like everyone's just like looking for marriage like immediately. Because like people would get married, like they'd get engaged and like, how long ago did you meet? And they're like, oh, like 2 weeks ago. And you're like, what? What are you,
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But you have all this now freedom of like not being under your parents' watchful eye all the time. And so you're like, what if we, you know... did some hand stuff. And,
did some hand stuff. What if I had my friend shake the bed underneath us?
My God. I literally can't wrap my head around that because I'm just like, I don't know what state of mind you have to be in to be like, this is for me.
This is for me. Well, I feel like a pretty desperate one at that point. You're trying to figure out literally anything to make it work. And I have another friend who is ex-Mormon, and he was talking about how like the way that he would date while he was still Mormon was he would bend the rules. Like he would date somebody and I don't know if he ever did like the whole soaking thing specifically, but he would bend the rules and like maybe he was like, I don't know, making out. I don't know. I don't remember what rules he was breaking exactly, but he would justify it by saying, but I'm going to marry her, so it's fine. But in reality, like he did that over and over again. And he was just trying to like justify wanting to just do all of this stuff. And it just cracks me up. It's so funny.
Yeah.
So now you are married, but you have, would you say ethically non-monogamous? Is that, or just like open? How do you define
it? Yeah, I would say that's accurate. That's how we've talked about it before. And kind of the thing is, it's like neither one of us wants to impede each other's happiness, which goes into like what are relationships supposed to be, right? Like this big like question, something that I've believe for a long time is that, you know, no one should be like another person's everything. Like that's so much. I mean, and I want to just say, like, first of all, monogamy is valid, non-monogamy is valid. Like if you are a monogamous person, cool.
Yeah. Like, but even so it like the way that we place so much on one person now is like not normal and not how things used to be done. We used to like that it takes a village mentality that we don't have anymore because we're all obsessed with individualism so much more. But like in reality, it used to be that you would have like, you know, some people that would help you with one task and other people that would help you with another. And so this partner was not your everything.
Right.
And now your partner is literally everything. And that it's scary when you think about it that way.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's not fair to either person either, because like, then one person feels like they have to do a lot and the other person feels like they have to do a lot. And like, oh, I want to see a movie, but this person isn't into like historical fiction or something random, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, they don't want to go see a movie, so now I just can't go see the movie, right? Like you can do things with other people, like just in a normal capacity without having it to always be like your significant other.
Yeah.
And I think that has become less, I think. But when you grow up and monogamy is the norm and that is the standard of society and that is everything you've ever known to be true, that means that everything outside of the confines of that has become like the weird or the not normal or whatever. And so it does take a little bit of like reworking the way that you think about certain things, because it's not something that you can just be like, oh, I'm going to just press this button and now I'm not monogamous. Yeah, like that's going to be a bad time for you and everyone involved.
How did you start this conversation between yourself and your wife? Did you know that this was something you wanted to explore before you met her? Or was this sort of like the two of you were like, you know what? I don't know. Do you want to date other people? I kind of want to date other people. And it just grew.
Yeah. It was a conversation that we had like fairly early on when we were like, hey, do you want to like try this with like being with other people? And like, it was like, you know, a lot lower stakes and it's still fairly low stakes of like being more on the open end of things versus like poly where you're like literally dating other people.
Yeah.
This is more of a like in the moment, like, do I feel like something with somebody like that I want to explore in a sexual way? Like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah.
Live your best life. But yeah, it was a conversation that was like pretty early on and we like tried it, I guess. Like we talked about it a lot beforehand and I was like, oh, like this is cool. I'm going to be into this. And which is fine up until a point because your brain, you know, can think something's going to be great. And then it actually like is staring in reality's face. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm not cool with this.
Yeah. So, yeah.
There's always sort of that like question mark that existed of like, is this going to be okay? Or am I going to feel terrible? Or, you know, all the questions. And once we had done it, I was like, huh, yeah, I'm good.
actually fine. Yeah.
No, I'm actually fine.
You had said to me when we like first talked that love is not an infinite resource, or it is an infinite resource. It's not a finite resource.
Yes. It's not a finite resource, right? Like, it's not like I can, you know, be attracted to this person, or I can love this person or whatever, which means that all of my love is now gone into this person and I cannot love anything or anyone else.
Like, right.
That's just not how it works. Like,
we
have two dogs. I don't love one only, and the other one's just like a bystander, right? Like, I love them both, like, questionably too much. But it's, you know, it's one of those things where you just, I think a lot of it is the key of most anything in life, which is like communication, right? Like talking about it. And then also knowing that in the process of doing something like that, one of you or both of you are going to make mistakes and you're going to fuck up, and you just got to like communicate through it. Because if you don't go in being like, oh, everything's going to be perfect and no one's going to make a mistake and no one's going to not communicate something they should have communicated, or someone's going to say something they shouldn't have said, like, I feel like this is a journey. This is a road. I know I'm like making it sound like super like flowery, but like it is like to a part, like just how you communicate with your partner and how you communicate just in general in your daily life with other people.
Well, and I think if you come to the table with the intention of like wanting to better the relationship or fine tune the boundaries so that everyone is okay, I would imagine that like the intention is so important and like, and goes a long way. Like if you're just trying to like get away with whatever you can, obviously that's not the like ethical open relationship that we're talking about. It's like really coming to the table and saying like, okay, let's figure out how to make this work so that everybody's comfortable, or maybe we dial it back and change our boundaries and like kind of figure it out as you go.
Yep.
Did you meet other people who were in open marriages that like helped to give you some like support or guidance, or did you find like online communities that do that, or did you kind of just like pave your own path?
I think it's been kind of a grab bag, a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things is like, unless you are friends with, or you are the person in your friend group that's like very open about like what your relationship status is, I think there's so much of a, I don't know, negative or stigma around anything other than monogamy that it is kind of like almost like a secret society situation where like you don't really know like who's in it, who's not in it.
Right.
Unless you've been in the community for a while. And I mean, I would say we're by standards like fairly new. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been together for 7 years, but it's still one of those things where like, you never know all of the information. You could always keep learning. And I think another part of it was like reading, right?
Yeah.
Like books that exist from people far smarter than, you know, John Smith 123 on Reddit. Probably going to know a little bit more what they're fucking talking about.
So how do you think, and like, obviously every couple is going to be different, and so you can't be an expert on how everybody communicates, but how do you think if someone was trying to potentially open up their relationship, like how would you go about that?
Something that like, I don't know that a lot of people consider is just the environment you're in when you bring it up, because like that can come across in different ways. So like, if you're like in the middle of making out and you're like being like, oh, it'd be super cool if we like brought another person into the bedroom, like that can feel like more in the moment than being like, hey, like separately, like, how do you feel about this idea? Which it's going to be like a scary conversation regardless, because you don't, most times you're not going to know what the other person's going to say unless you've already talked about it beforehand. It takes a lot of work beforehand of making sure that it is someone that you feel safe having like kind of uncomfortable or scary conversations with, because there is just an unknown factor to it where you don't know how that person's going to respond. And it will be probably more than one conversation. I'll say that just because, like, you know, it's probably, if it's being brought up for the first time, going to be new for both people, or at least one.
Yeah. So don't anticipate it being like a one conversation and then you're just tomorrow you're open.
Yeah. And I don't think it should be one conversation either. Like, I think it should be like an ongoing dialogue that you have, because, you know, consent in and of itself is an ongoing dialogue that you should be, you know, navigating with your partner. But especially when you are talking about like another person, like occupying space, it's especially important, because like you're not only now, you know, with your partner dynamic, you also have a third party, and that just by nature of numbers complicates things.
Yeah.
And I think another thing is like talking about what that other person is and what you're looking for in someone to join, right? Because this is one of my biggest pet peeves. When a guy is like, yeah, babe, let's like get another girl in the bedroom. And she's like, ooh, that'd be really cool. Can we get another guy? And he's like, fuck no, that's gross. And it's like, sir, your male-centered pleasure view is like really out in the wind right now.
Yes. And it's just so like, that's so unfair. I understand why that would be a really big pet peeve. That sucks.
I think it's one of those things too, where it's like, there's the like heteronormativity. That's a word, right?
It is now.
You know, that dictates like, oh, well, if we have another woman come in the bedroom and my wife wants to be with her and she wants to be with me, like everything's safe, because, you know, she's not going to leave with a woman, which is like, okay, why not? But that's the viewpoint. And then like, if it's another guy, they're like, oh no, she could like really like him a lot better. Or he does that thing with the swirl at the end. And you're like, what? They're both equally likely in that scenario, right? Like, it doesn't matter about like that. And it's a very, like, I think ownership point of view of like, this is my property versus this is like my partner.
Yeah.
And I don't love it.
Yeah. That's a good way to frame it, actually, that it ends up being sort of possessive when it's that way, that you're making the rules for both parties instead of looking at it as like a partner. I liked the way that you suggested maybe like the first time you bring it up, knowing it's going to be several conversations, but when you're already like aroused, because I think that like you're already warmed up. You're already kind of in the mind space of like, I could potentially explore this, versus like, I don't know, if you're like making quesadillas together and you're like, do you want to fuck other people maybe? Like, that's all that's jarring.
It feels a little blunt.
Exactly. Exactly. But if you're already like, you're making out, and then you can find a way to like make that, like that could even just be a part of like how you're building foreplay and whatever, is like to suggest that. And then later be like, hey, actually, I actually am kind of interested. And see how it goes from there. And then just a lot of back and forth, I'm sure, about like boundaries and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I agree with that to a point. I think the downside of that is if the other person like really isn't on board with that idea, like that just shuts everything down immediately. Cause like then they're going to be like, well, I'm not good enough for them. Like,
that's not what it's about, but all right. Yeah, but I think even like, in that circumstance, I would hope that you're close enough to the person. If you're suggesting this, I would hope that you're close enough to the person that you know how to also make them feel secure. If that is the reply and like the response that you get, like, okay, like maybe you're not going to have sex that night. It's not that big of a deal. You tried, you had that conversation, which was what you wanted to do also. And hopefully you know how to make your person, your partner feel more secure. And I also feel like in general, people need to like get over feeling like everything that they word has to sound really like casual and breezy. Like in that circumstance, like, I think it's completely okay and appropriate to be like, I want you to feel secure. Like, how can I do that for you? And just be like, just say it. Don't try to make it into this like weird flowery whatever. Just like actually ask. And I think that you'll end up recovering from that. And I think you mentioned this too, to really think about like what the purpose is for you of opening up the relationship, because that will inevitably be part of the conversation too. Like, what does it mean for you to have this partnership now open up to explore other possibilities too?
Yeah, exactly. And like, for the most part, I mean, like, depending on how long you've been with someone, you may like know how they feel about that, you know, like, cause sometimes you'll be like in a group of people and someone will make like a joke and then like the person's like, I'm not opposed to that. And then you're like, oh, that's a conversation we can have at another point in time.
Yeah.
But like sometimes you don't know, but I would hope that, you know, you have that sort of just built in safety into the relationship of like where you can talk about those things and you can be like, this is a conversation I would like to have and to see if, you know, together we're both into this idea or if it's not for us.
Yeah.
And I think it's a important thing to do to make sure that you're like kind of setting up that safety net for your partner too, of like being like, hey, we don't have to like finish this conversation, you know, in one sitting. We don't have to even have more than this conversation again, if you aren't into it. And like, how can I support, you know, or be sensitive if you're not feeling great about this, you know, like, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And so it is like that. You need to know your partner and you also, but you also need to know like how to set up sort of that safe space.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I feel like I learned a lot about how to start open relationships. I feel like I'm already like, I barely even answer my text messages. Ain't no fucking way I can have another relationship. There's no way. Well,
that's,
way. I mean,
that's why like there's all those different levels too, right? Like you have like poly where you're like in multiple relationships with other people.
Yeah.
And then you have the other end, which is just more of like open, which is what I would say that, you know, we have, where it's not like,
not like the emotional attachment as much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you care about the person enough, but you're not like checking in on their, you know, every day.
You're not like, hey, like, let's go to a wedding together usually.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe you're in the same way together and that's just, but I think, you know, it's more towards the, like the open is more towards the physical aspect of it, which nothing wrong with that. In figuring out and in having those discussions, like you can kind of figure out, because like, I mean, I have enough problems dealing with someone that's not even me. I have enough problems with myself where I'm like, okay, I can do like another person.
Yeah.
Anything more than that is, nah, it's not going to happen.
Maxing out. Yeah. That's how I feel too.
Yeah. So it's, you know, being able to see what you're both into, I guess, is the short version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love that. And I'm so like happy that we got to learn all of this and you shared so much and I appreciate it so much. I ask everyone who comes on the podcast if they have any specific dating advice that sticks out to you. Is there any golden nugget that you would like to impart dating on us today? Yeah.
As far as dating goes, I somehow managed to get my wife. It's still a mystery to me. I don't understand it. Anyone that has seen her and I next to each other is like, how did this happen?
Oh, that's sweet.
But I would say, like, especially as you get older, which is why like when people get married like super young, I'm just like, you don't even know who you are yet. What are you doing? Which, you know, it works for some people, whatever. But like not losing yourself in the process of trying to find someone else, I think is like critical, because it's really easy to be like, almost like in that codependent state where you're like, this is my person, their personality is my personality. And then you become a hive mind and then you're just like, you know, running across the universe, conquering galaxies.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to like have your own separate things, like your own hobbies, your own interests, like your own friends. And like, you know, there's not like a rule or you're like, oh, we can't have like friends that are mixing, but like, mm-hmm. you know, just like having things that are what keeps you, you, and like yeah. keeps them, because like the reason, generally the reason like why you fell in love or why you fell in lust or why you're just hanging around that person in general is because you like their personality, hopefully, you know?
Yeah. But, that's true. And I don't, have you read any of like Esther Perel's stuff?
Yes, I have.
So she talks about how if you are too close to your partner, you end up forming like, you're just like an amorphous blob and there's no mystery yeah. and it kills like your sense of desire for the person because there's nothing to desire because they're the same freaking person. And yeah. so I think that that advice is also really helpful just to like keep the spark alive. Have a little something that you're doing that's your own. Take a pottery class.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Because like that way you're like, you're still, you know, individuals and you're not a glob, I guess.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Did you want to bring up any, you were talking to me about like BIPOC and LGBTQ yeah. creators that you love. Are there any yeah. that you I mean, specifically want to talk about?
So like as a white cis male who has like very recently like come out as queer, I have only been like speaking to my own experiences, and there is a whole just absolute amazing resource group of people that know their shit better than anything I could ever even fathom, which isn't surprising because they have wholly different experiences than me. But yeah, there are some just incredibly intelligent, and not only that, their writing is just like super concise and super to the point, and you like are picking up information left and right. Specifically some people, Dr. Erica Simpson, she puts out just an absolute ton of information, especially about women's bodies and especially like people of color's bodies. I actually like sent her a message today. I was like, I learn something new every time you post something.
Yeah. I follow her too. She's great.
Yeah. She's fantastic. Dr. Devin Price is fantastic. Especially when it comes to like autism stuff, which mm-hmm. I've been learning is a possibility that I'm on the spectrum and not from TikTok.
Oh, it's rough.
But my therapist was like, you should read this book by this person. And I was like, that name sounds super familiar. And then I like thought about it for 3 more seconds. And I was like, oh, I follow them. That's why it sounds familiar.
Oh, that's so funny.
So yeah. Gabrielle Smith, fantastic. Corey Bush, Intrasensual. There's, like I said, there's just so many people that, I don't know. I feel like you should absolutely have, come on, because they have just, they just know their shit. I don't know how else to say it. They are just people that are experts in their fields, and they're so good.
Well, we'll definitely put them all in there, and then I'll get busy sending some DMs.
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. Like, I'd watch that and be like, I'm learning new things again.
Yeah. Well, it's also nice to just hear people in long form when you only see like little snippets of their information. It's nice to get like a whole hour. Like, we're going to unpack all of it. And that you learn a lot that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we like scratch the surface.
Oh, yeah. I always feel that way. Earlier today, I said to Matt, I was like, I hope I have enough questions to fill an hour. We didn't get to like half of them. Like
four.
Yeah. Like, but it always happens that way because like there's just always so much to talk about. And, you know, and I'm grateful for these kinds of conversations because I still learned a lot. And there's still just so much. There's so much. So thank you for coming on. This has been so long overdue. Of course. And okay. And also your Instagram, fuck yeah, sex positive, but it's FCK.
Because of standards, I guess. I don't know.
Yes. And then YEA, sex positive. Yes. Right?
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I loved chatting with you. You're one of my Instagram besties. So it was nice to actually have a whole hour. And I loved it.
That was great. Yeah.
Yay. Thank you so much for listening. As a reminder, we are always accepting questions about sex ed, about relationships, life advice. We will accept it all. We would love to hear from you. So send us an email to AlyssaExplainsItAllPod@gmail.com.